All right, Slump Busters, episode 72 on the way. I got Joe Murray of Joe Murray Sports on. Joe, I think we're going to add a break to happy National Podcast Day on three. Ready? Three, two, one.
Slump Busters. Quiet on the set. Make sure my mic is on. Eris, Dre, and Juju Dog diving towards the pylon. Go for two, so damn rude. Recognize authority. Spitting tips for fantasy. No way you're outscoring me. Bold predictions with conviction every single day. Sports addiction, no restriction. Kicking game like Pele. He's the greatest. What's the basis? Pick an athlete. Let's debate this game. Outrageous trading places. Sudden death, take 10 paces. Turn and shoot. Boys the truth. Mamba mentality. Future greats take their place. Dreams become reality. Blowing outside, knocked it out the park. Your boy discovered fire like a rock with a spark. Refs acting like Neanderthals. Phantom flags, nothing calls. Heartbreak losses, tragic falls. Every week discuss it all. Settle in, listen up. Free your time like Andrew Luck. Show's about to start. I suggest you buckle up.
Alrighty, guys, this is your host, Juju Talk Sports. I'm joined, of course, by, like I mentioned, Joe Morley of Joe Morley Works. Welcome into the Slump Buster, my friend.
Thank you, Abe. Thanks for inviting me in here. I'm excited to be here.
I'm happy to have you. We have a lot of things to break down, my friend. It's been a busy sports week. A lot has happened. A lot yet to happen. A lot of interesting subjects mixed in there. First off, you know, just to start off the show, we have a NHL champion. Congratulations to the Tampa Bay Lightning. We have some playoff baseball. We have the finals starting tonight for the NBA. COVID has definitely caused a lot of interesting, unique circumstances here in the sporting landscape. Part of it is just, you know, with all the sports getting pushed back, we're seeing a lot of overlap in what viewers will have to choose from on a daily basis. At least if on Thursday Night Football, it's a pretty easy choice this week as we have the Jets versus the Broncos. If you had to choose, let's say all four of these are going on at the same time, how do you rank your sports? I'm curious, Joe. Where do you lean?
You know, if it is an elimination game in baseball, I'll probably watch that game, depending on who's playing. And like I said, if it's an elimination, I will watch the, because I think any football is good football. So I watch anything. I'll watch it, especially this game. I think there's a lot more implications on this game than people think, especially with the Jets and Adam Gase. So I want to watch about that. But if the Dodgers have an elimination game on that day, I'll be watching that.
Yeah, as far as that goes, Adam Gase, the implication being that if he loses to, God, I can't even name the starter right now for the Broncos, bye. Get out of here. The fact that the Jets lost by 30 points to my San Francisco 49ers backup unit, same goes for the Giants. Basically, New York football is just an absolute travesty right now between those two franchises. They are determined to get Trevor Lawrence in New York one way or the other.
Like you said, every sporting team in New York right now, we don't even have to talk football. We can talk baseball, basketball, whatever you want to talk. Sports in New York is pretty sad right now.
I think I read a stat that in the last 20 years, the Tampa Bay franchises have as many championships as the New York-based franchises. And considering that there's only the Lightning, the Buccaneers, the Rays, who we know haven't won any, versus the New York franchises where there's two football teams, two baseball teams, two basketball teams, how is that even possible? That just does not make sense to me. That does not compute that the Tampa Bay franchises can say they have more. And hell, the Tampa Bay Rays are balling this year. There's an opportunity that they could win the World Series and continue to add to that total. They will, of course, probably have to run into the Yankees, so a little AL East kind of battle out there. You mentioned the Dodgers. I take it you're a Dodger fan?
Yeah, I'm a Dodger fan out here in the West Coast.
Okay, I'm sorry that you make poor decisions, my friend. Giants fan. Even though I will say, obviously, you guys have dominated the NL West for the last 8 years. I have to live with that. But hey, we still got the rings. Let's see if you guys could turn around your favors this year.
That was the one team that I was glad didn't make it in was the Giants, because they would have took that 8th seed and the Dodgers and the Giants would have been playing today. And yeah, that was the one team I was scared of. You know, the Padres too, I'm scared of playing the Padres, but the Giants for some reason have always got to the Dodgers, no matter what their record is.
Yeah, I was looking at that. They were the only team with a positive run differential that didn't make the postseason. And I was shocked as anyone that that team was actually doing anything, to be honest. I was looking at our lineup. I'm like, yeah, we have Carl Yastrzemski's grandkid, but for the most part, everything's pretty gross to look at. I guess I got to give it really a great shout out to Farhan Zaidi, who we stole from you guys. He's been doing a great job. He does this little day trading where he just finds guys off the scrap heap and they end up doing pretty well. 60 game season, you could tell that there was a little bit of a surge between, they had that hot stretch of 20 games they gave them in there. And I did see polls that, yes, Dodgers fans said, which team do you least want to see in the eighth seed? It was the Giants. Gave me a little hope. But as you mentioned, final weekend, Slam Diego ruined us. Those San Diego Padres, I mean, they had a fantastic fun year. But again, postseason comes along and they're not looking too great against the Cardinals as of this moment. If they get eliminated in the first round, that would be a pretty typical San Diego Padres fashion. The Marlins actually won today, which another surprising early result. Out of that group, I think it's definitely the Dodgers league to lose in the National League. If any of these other teams rise above to steal that away from them, I think it would be an absolute travesty and really, really shocking, to be honest.
Yeah, and I'm not sure where I read this at, but I read something about the Marlins, and I remember the Marlins winning the World Series when I was younger. They said the Marlins, every time they make the playoffs, they win the World Series. Hey, and today showed, like, they came out hot. And, you know, part of me was thinking, like, maybe I did overrate the Cubs because the Cubs probably played a little bit better than everybody expected already this year. And now they're playing a good Marlins team that, you know, that Marlins team, you know they want it. You know they want to prove they could win and they could play it. They're supposed to be here.
As far as the Marlins, I looked at that roster and I just assumed it was a Triple-A team based off everything that Derek Jeter has done to tank that squad. The fact that they're competing in a weird year, if the Marlins happen to make the World Series, that would just be the ultimate 2020. Speaking of that, on the AL side of things, the Astros advance. I don't know how you feel about that one, given that the Twins have lost, I think I've read, 17 straight playoff games. That is just, wow.
Yeah, 18
straight.
So I know that they 2004 was the last time they won.
Yeah, I know that the Yankees have had ownage on them, but apparently just everyone in the AL, anytime they make it to October, they're pretty much everyone's doormat to walk over. Quick exit for the Twins. Astros advance. That would just be the epitome of sadness here in 2020 if the Astros, Rob Manfred, handstand the commissioner's trophy over to them, given everything that started this year. If it wasn't for COVID, though, I'm sure we've seen a lot more Astros players plunk throughout the year. They avoided interesting crowd exchanges. There was a lot of heat coming their way.
And you know what? Because of this new playoff format, it's sad for the Twins because maybe it would have gone different if they didn't change the playoff standings up and allow eight teams to be in because they wouldn't have been playing. I want to say they would have been the number two or number three seed. I think they were the number three, right? So they would either been playing the White Sox or I believe the Indians in their division right now. And I think they could have beat either one of them, but they got that bad break and had to play the Astros because of the expanded field. And the Astros, with their experience in the postseason, I think just hurt them because the Twins had a good roster.
Who do you think comes out of the AL? We said that the Dodgers are most likely to come out of the NL, but AL is a little bit more open.
Before the season started, I was on the Oakland A's bandwagon, I guess you would say. I came out before the playoffs. I still said I'm back in the A's. I think they have a good young squad. Yesterday, they came out, just got beat down by the White Sox, but today they bounced back, so they did good. I also like Tampa Bay. I think I like the two small market teams, you know, if you go that route. Yeah, I like those two. I'm hoping the Astros don't win, man. I could stand the Yankees winning more than I could stand the Astros. I'll tell you that. Like, I'd rather see the Yankees win than the Astros win.
It's all about just scaling your level of hatred at this point. Let's talk about the other conclusion to a shortened, delayed season. We're talking about the NBA Finals. Those are taking place tonight. Surprisingly, the first number five seed in NBA history to advance to an NBA Finals, the Miami Heat, put away my Celtics, sadly, to advance to face the Los Angeles Lakers in the NBA Finals. The Lakers have been a preseason pick, going back to their first acquisition of Anthony Davis. The only question was, can they get past the Clippers? Well, they didn't have to worry about that. The Clippers couldn't even get past the Nuggets. With tonight's final starting up, are you leaning Lakers to put this away easy? Do you think they're going to have a little bit of a fight? How are you evaluating this series?
You know, I'm not a big basketball guy. I only like watching it during the playoffs. I think it's so intense in the playoffs that it makes it worth everything. But that Heat team, you have to be excited about what that Heat team has been doing. Like the way they're playing hard, and you know, I think they're just well coached. I think he's a very good coach. Don't get me to say his name because I always screw it up. But I don't know. I think the Lakers have woke up. You know, they had the beginning of the playoffs, they had a little bit of struggle. AD had to wake up and make sure, like, hey, I'm actually on a team that's going to win, and he's there. And to be honest, sometimes the magic runs out, and I think the Lakers just go ahead and take this series. I think they do it pretty quick.
If you had to put a game on it?
In my head, the first number that popped up was game five.
Five. That's been pretty typical about what the Lakers have been doing throughout the playoffs. They put away the Trailblazers in five. They put away the Nuggets in five. Oh, gosh, I'm spacing on who they faced in that middle series there. Either way, the Lakers put them away in five.
The Rockets.
Yes, the Rockets. I don't know how I can forget that. Probably because the Rockets are pretty forgettable when it comes to their postseason runs. I agree, though. I feel as though five is... Okay, you know what? Actually, I'm going to say six. Just because you mentioned how scrappy, how determined this Heat team is. I got you on this one, big man. Eric Spoelstra, their head coach, he's been able to put together solid rotations for them throughout. The only thing is just matchup-wise, I think Bam Adebayo is going to have a tough time dealing with Anthony Davis. Anthony Davis has the perfect combination where he can stop Bam on the defensive side of things, and his ability to score, I don't think Bam's going to be able to compete with. So it's going to be a big series for Anthony Davis as much as LeBron James. I would say that the deck is stacked to the point where if LeBron James was to lose this series, this would be almost as bad, if not worse, than when they lost to the Dallas Mavericks in 2011, his Miami Heat team then. They're heavy favorites. There's really no excuse in the year where we had the Kobe Bryant tragedy. I'm sure we're going to see those mama mentality jerseys a couple more times throughout this year. Everything's lining up for a storybook ending for LeBron James. So if he doesn't pull down his fourth title, what do you think of that narrative? I'm curious, if LeBron James fails in this series, is that a bigger indictment on him or how this Lakers roster was constructed?
I think it's more on him because everybody always compares him to the greats, right? You're up there with Michael Jordan. You're up there with Kobe Bryant. And he makes it look easy to get to the finals in his career. He's there almost every year, right? And to me, is it the talent around him or is it just him? And you compare that to the era, you know, back with Kobe and with Jordan, I think they had better teams, that they didn't have a lot of weaker teams compared to now. Now, you know who the strong teams are, who's going to make it. So I think he has an easier way to the finals. So losing in the finals when you're, especially like this year, and like you said, against the Mavs, when you're losing, when you're a heavy favorite, I think that weighs a lot on you, especially in the conversation of being one of the best players to ever play the game. Yeah, I think fans already, for some reason, already throw a lot of hate towards LeBron. You know, it's either you love him or you hate him. And a lot of people hate him for absolutely no reason, just because, you know, he wins. But this would just bring out more of the boo birds and the haters. And I would think that it tarnishes his legacy more losing in the long run of being just compared to the greats.
And the counter to that, the two-way street is if he does win, fourth title, third title on a different franchise, that puts him in a unique category, a bit of a unicorn category, because Michael doesn't have that comparison, Kobe doesn't have that comparison. I don't know how realistic it is for him to match Michael's ring count at this point. He still can, of course, match Kobe at five, but to say win two more after winning this one would be a challenge. If he matched Michael ring for ring, including all the finals that he at least made appearances in, then the debate gets that much interesting. It's unique. We always have that argument when it comes to LeBron. Is it better that he made it to these finals and lost in those finals than it was for Michael back in the day to not make it to those finals, lose in the earlier rounds? It's kind of like damned if you do, kind of damned if you don't. You pretty much make it to the finals, you have to win or you're, well, for lack of better words, fucked.
Yeah, I think he has to win this. This one has to help him out.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's talk about something in your backyard, also being on the West Coast, the return of Pac-12 football. Are you a big Pac-12 guy?
Yeah. You know what? I am. I am a big Pac-12. I grew up an Oregon fan. I don't know why I went to Oregon or I went that way, because, you know, a lot of my family is USC or UCLA fans. I think it was because when I was in high school, you know, as playing high school football, that was the first team, our first college to ever send me a letter. And I got excited and I was like, oh, so I started rooting for them. But yeah, I'm excited for them to be back.
And the reason I want to talk about this, obviously it is a big story. Literally this news broke after finished my last recording. So didn't get an opportunity to talk about it as that breaking news. But the Pac-12, they announced that they're going to finally get back into things. This is about a week and a half, 2 weeks after the Big Ten announced that they were going to come back. November 7th, 6th, 7th weekend is when they're expecting to have their initial kickoff. Most teams, if I'm not mistaken, are going to play a seven-game schedule. And I know that the Pac-12 hasn't gotten much love anyway from the committee, the selection committee, in terms of making it to the playoffs and having an opportunity to compete for the title. Oregon, you mentioned them. They were projected to be at least in the top 10, have an opportunity to break that mold if by chance one of those higher-tiered SEC teams, Clemson, or let's say Ohio State happened to just blow it. Do you think that there is any opportunity now with an abbreviated schedule for an Oregon or any Pac-12 team to make it into the BCS college football playoffs?
See, I was wondering that earlier, how bad the seven-game schedule would hurt them just because they're playing less, a little less games, and they're starting later. And I mean, I guess if you go 7-0, you always have a chance because you got to listen to what the committee's going to put you in there and see how you do. But I think it's going to hurt you, especially like you said, being on the West Coast already hurts them as well. I did read something that the Pac-12 was trying to get the BCS to add more playoff teams this year, but I think they got denied on that one. So they already know that they're kind of already hurting themselves. And to be honest, you said, you know, that it's going to start what, like
November 6th and 7th weekend.
So I heard Chip Kelly come out and he said he still would be surprised if the season even happens. He said that, like, basically the Pac-12 is kind of dragging their feet. And yeah, they're talking about it like, yeah, we'll do it. But they have no real plan. They just said, yeah, we're going to come back, but they have no real plan to actually how they're going to do COVID testing, how they're going to play these games. And that's from Chip Kelly himself. So it's going to be interesting to see if the Pac-12 actually follows through with it. And they've been real quiet, the Pac-12. And it's kind of weird. Like, they put out stuff like, yeah, we want to play, but it's like, they're not really taking a stand for or against it. And it's kind of weird to me that the Pac-12 is basically they're just following whatever the Big Ten does. And hopefully that they're thinking that whatever the Big Ten does, we'll just follow right behind them and we'll look good too.
Yeah. And I think one of the unique things that the Pac-12 has to deal with is a lot of the decisions have been taken out of their hands. A lot of politics have been involved in the decision making. A lot of these schools obviously based out in California, which has a little bit more restrictions than other parts of the country given the COVID pandemic. And I could definitely see, as you mentioned, the Pac-12, even with this announcement, potentially not happening. Now, I want to see it. You mentioned Oregon. Oregon has always been a team with so much swag. I love watching Oregon. But they've also had one of their top recruits, I believe Penei Sewell, believed to be a generational offensive lineman that's going to go very high in next year's draft. I believe he's already has opted out of this coming year, regardless if they decide to play or not. And that's going to obviously hurt them. I'm sure there's other players, given the uncertainty, who have also just made that decision to just opt out. I believe Oregon would still be the favorite. I don't think USC is ready to compete at all. UCLA, Chip hasn't shown that he has that old Chip Kelly magic at all. Utah's actually has been a team that's been competing. But really, they were always going to be dealt a bad hand in general when it came to selection committee. And then the fact is, like you mentioned, is 7-0 even good enough? 7-0 in the Pac-12 versus a two-loss SEC team, a two-loss Big Ten team. You could play a lot of arguments and different debates that would have the selection committee leaning in favor of those other teams based off competition level from the get-go. There's just not a lot of things in favor of the Pac-12, even if they do get going. But I think it's just a good thing for them to do for their athletes, because they're having this tough thing happen to them where they're losing a lot of recruits that are in their hometowns, that are in their states, in their cities. And I think you can't keep losing kids that were born in LA to go play in Alabama. I was looking at USC's recruiting over the last few years and how their classes are rated have consistently been going down and down. It's just because they keep losing their top guys in California. How is that even possible? USC was one of the biggest brands whenever I was growing up. And now they just don't have that same cachet. The only one that still has that cachet is Oregon, and Oregon, just because they have the Nike deal. They have the creative jersey. So they're always at people's forefront. And we haven't seen a competitive USC team since Pete Carroll.
Yeah, I agree with you. It's no secret the top athletes for football come out of Florida, Texas, or California. And if you can't recruit in your own backyard, there's something wrong with your program. And they need to, you know, fix that. And I think UCLA is far away from it. I think USC is far away from it. And kids, you know, they grow up and they want that instant gratification. They want to win now. They don't want you to promise, you know, maybe by your senior year we'll be competitive. No, I want to go somewhere where I'm going to be looked at. I can be going to the NFL within, you know, the next couple of years and actually trying to win a championship. And that's what none of these schools, like you said, they can, you know, Oregon and maybe Utah can provide it. Maybe maybe another school will step up. You know, Stanford always seems to play better than they are, and they have a little bit of more connections with the NFL. They could promise you a little bit more, but you go to Oregon and you play USC, you play UCLA, and you get a win over it. It's not the same anymore as going to, you know, Alabama and getting a big win over a team like LSU. To you, when you tell the stories when you get older as a kid, that's going to sound more exciting, more pumped up, and make you feel more proud as a player, I think.
And you talk about the NFL pipeline. When it comes to schools and their connections, part of that also is just being on national TV, being the primary focus. Obviously, a lot of people miss out on Pac-12 games given time zones. And I obviously didn't have much of an appreciation for time zones until I moved just one hour more, adding from the Mountain Standard Time to Central Time. It is harder to stay up for a Pac-12 game than it used to be. And obviously, if you're on the East Coast, you do miss a lot of that, kids in those spotlights. But you will see Alabama. You will see LSU. And if these teams keep getting those BCS games, those playoff games, those big-time bowl games, as opposed to these Pac-12 teams, that's also going to limit exposure. And that's something that if you're a recruiter, if you're Alabama, if you're Debo Sweeney out there in Clemson, you can just pitch to these kids that, you know, UCLA can't anymore. And I think that's just going to hurt them in the long run. So I think it is important for them to get back out there. I think it's important for them to commit the money, whatever it takes, to make sure that they could put on a season, because other conferences are doing it. The Big Ten was probably the one that shifted their readiness and ability to do it the most. But I believe when you look at what's going on in the Big 12, I went to a UT game. Everything seemed fine for the most part. I know there's little cases here and there. I know Baylor ran into some trouble this past week. But since we've managed to move on, and with the SEC, they've made the financial commitment to do it. It's just how much do those Pac-12 teams care about ensuring that their athletes have the same opportunity as the other kids around the country?
Yeah, I think you're exactly right on there. There's no more argument from here. I think the Pac-12 has to look into what they're doing and change it up, because out here in California, just the junior colleges alone have a lot of athletes. A lot of recruitment from the junior colleges go out of state, like you were saying earlier. Pac-12 needs to look themselves in the mirror and see what they're doing wrong. Basically, their whole conference needs to be fixed, not just the big powerhouse schools.
Our next subject is going to be NFL Week 4. But before we do that, I want to give a shout out to the guys that help this podcast run and can help you a lot in your life. Manscaped.com, the number one in men's grooming. If you use promo code SLUMP, guess what? You can save 20% off plus free shipping and handling at manscaped.com. You want to save more money? You want to get some delicious coffee? How about using promo code SLUMP at cavemancoffeeco.com? Now, Caveman Coffee, they have a ton of great brands. Obviously, fall has come. Pumpkin spice latte out there. Nitro cold brew. Hibiscus tea. Go ahead and check out our sponsors, Caveman Coffee. And finally, Razorsport.com. Let's say you want to place a bet on these NBA games, MLB games, these upcoming slate of NFL games, or hopefully some Pac-12 games whenever those are game played. Check out Razorsport.com. They have the winners. They tell you where to place your bets. And 99.9% of the time, they're going to show you the right place to put your money in and get more green in your pocket. All the money that you saved, reinvest it, put it back out there. Check out all three of our sponsors, Razorsport, Caveman Coffee, Manscaped.com. Here's a couple quick words from them.
This is a message brought to you by the Foundation for a Perfect Package.
Why do I need Manscaped?
Why do I need Manscaped?
Why do I need Manscaped?
Because the only thrill I want is the one up top.
Because being in a relationship is not an excuse to be lazy.
Because I like talking ball, not smelling like them.
Because deforestation is proven to prevent forest fires. Manscaped is the only brand dedicated to below the waist grooming.
Manscaped's crop preserver guarantees that you smell your best all day long.
Manscaped boxer briefs are the most comfortable underwear on the market.
Manscaped's advanced skincare technology makes nicks a thing of the past.
Manscaped is the number one in men's grooming. Subscribers get 2 free blade refills every 3 months. Get 20% off plus free shipping and handling with the promo code SLUMP at manscaped.com. That's the promo code SLUMP at manscaped.com. Get your Lawnmower 3.0 today.
We are the Slump Busters.
And we approve this message.
Hello guys, this is Juju Talk Sports. You like sports betting, right? Of course you do. Well, let's bust that slump. Let me tell you about RazorSport.com. Razor is a worldwide sports betting network all designed around helping you. Their diverse crew of handicappers produce plays the biggest sharps don't want you to know about. Go to their website right now and sign up for a free trial at RazorSport.com. That's Razor, R-A-Z-E-R, Sport.com. Proud partners of the Slump Buster Podcast. Check them out and enjoy the rest of the show.
All right, guys, we are back. Of course, Juju Talk Sports, run by Joe Morley. We are getting into NFL Week 4, and naturally, we have to start off with this spectacle of a game. Never in my life have I thought that I would see such a fantastic matchup on Thursday night, but here we are. Adam Gase, the New York Jets, at 0-3 versus the Broncos, also at 0-3, on their third-string quarterback. The current betting line in this one is... I think it's a coin flip. I don't think anyone has. Yeah, no kidding. At this time, it's currently a pick'em. New York Jets, Denver Broncos. That kind of tells you between both these teams, Vegas isn't sure what to make of them. I like the Broncos going into the year, but clearly, when you're on your third string quarterback in just week 4, things haven't gone according to plan. They lost Von Miller. Courtwood Sutton's out. Not a great year for the Mile High City. And then on the other side of things, the New York Jets, I mentioned it earlier, my Niners blew them out. The Colts blew them out. They got blown out in week 1. They're just having a bad year. And Adam Gase, if he doesn't make it past this Denver Broncos team, see ya. Catch you later on the next stream out, the next train out of there. Joe, between these two teams, Vegas doesn't want to pick a winner, but you have that honor, my friend.
Well, I mean, to have these two high-powered offenses go at each other, I think it's going to be very tough. I mean, I think what are the Jets are 32nd and the Broncos are 29th in the league in offense. You know what would make this game even better if Blake Bortles gets in the game, right? That would just, like, put the icing on the cake. Man, I think the Broncos win this game. I can't believe in the Jets. I can't do it. I don't believe in Adam Gase. I think he's made a living off of being an offensive coordinator for Peyton Manning, and this is the second team that he's been able to work his way into. I like Vic Fangio, the coach of the Broncos. I think he's a very good coach. I think he's getting some tough breaks being there. Like you said, losing your quarterback, they lost their running back, they lost a wide receiver, they lost Von Miller. Those are some key players. But his team plays hard. I think even if you watch the Broncos, like, people are probably not going to tune in because it's the Broncos and the Jets. They're both 0-3. But you got to watch the Bronco team. Even with all these injuries, I think they still play hard, and they play hard for their coach.
I think that's the key there. They're still going to play hard. They're still going to bring it. I think the Jets, you just don't see any enthusiasm there. You don't see any fight left. They just seem so beaten down by not only the New York headlines, but just Adam Gase is a morale killer. I think that's one of the worst coaching hires we've had in the last 10 years. And that's not a joke. That's not a exaggeration. When he got hired out of Miami, it struck me because you saw this team losing in division. It's not like this caught you off guard. You literally saw it in division twice a year, Adam Gase on the opposing sideline, and you said, we need to hire this man. And yeah. Sam Darnold's career has just taken a step backwards. It's ever since the mononucleosis thing. Adam Gase didn't even want to say his name. He called him out by his number. I think That is where this is at. Live update, potentially. It looks like the Jets are actually -1 slight favorites, which is terrible considering they're also the home team, that they're just at -1. I'm also going to the Broncos because, again, they just play harder. Regardless of who's on their team, who's starting under center, I like the Broncos. Let's move into the Sunday slate, which is more exciting. Got a lot more going on. The most surprising 3-0 team on the year. You've seen my memes. I post plenty of them. The Chicago Bears with new quarterback, Nick Big Dick Foles. At least that's according to the rumors on Twitter. No verification on my end. But
I'll just put that out there.
Exactly. A nice Christian man, Nick Foles, has the most non-nice Christian nickname. The Bears are going to be entering as 2.5-point underdogs against the Indianapolis Colts. Now, the Colts had that bad loss in week 1 against the Jaguars, but since seemed to have righted the ship. They had a big week against the Minnesota Vikings in week 2. They came back, blew out those Jets that we were talking about earlier in week 3. And I projected big things from this team at the start of the year. I had them as a 10-win team. I had them as a playoff team. The Bears, I had them actually as a competitive middling team. Them starting 3-0 caught me off guard. And it hasn't been pretty, obviously. In week 1, they had the comeback victory with fourth quarter Mitch. Came down to a DeAndre Swift drop. And then week 3, the Falcons just can't hold a lead to save their lives. On the road, I got to go with the, gosh, it's actually a close game. This is a tough one for me to pick. Do I want to defer to you, Joe? What is your take on this game? Go for it.
It's funny that you talk about the memes that you send out this morning. I actually had a friend send me one of your memes on Instagram, and he just sent it. We have people do it. They just exchange them, and he sent it to me, and I go, hey, I'm actually going to be on their show later on today. And so it's kind of funny that it's kind of
hey.
that's how good your stuff is. It's everywhere, man. It's everywhere. And yeah, the Bears are the surprise team. And like last week, when they were 2-0, I kept asking people, what is your surprise 2-0 team? And nobody would mention the Bears. And they're like, the Raiders or the Rams. And I'm like, no, it's the Bears. The Bears for sure are your surprise team because nobody expected it. You know, we expected the Bears to play a little bit down. And, you know, their offensive line is absolutely garbage. But like you said, they have played not the best teams. They played the Lions, they played the Giants, and they played the Falcons. And they were down big to the Falcons, and then they came back. And you're not going to be able to do that this week against, you know, the #1 defense. This is the test. You want to see how Bears fans are out there bragging about Nick Foles. And I'm on record of saying Nick Foles is overrated. I think he had that one great run with the Eagles as a backup. If he was the Eagle quarterback that whole year, I don't think they would have gone anywhere. But, you know, he only had to do a little short stretch. He got beat out by Gardner Minshew last year in Jacksonville, and now you expect him to come in and lead you to a championship here. You're giving him a 3-0 team. We'll see how it ends up. But this is a big test right here. This is the #1 defense in the NFL coming into your house. Nick Foles better be ready or Bear fans are going to eat some of the words that they've been throwing out there this week.
You sold me. I'm going to go with the Colts. I'm going to go pick them even with the points. But I'm going to ask you this question. Do you think that we see Mitch Trubisky back on the field at any point this season? And the reason I ask this is when you actually look at Nick Foles' track record, he hasn't started and finished a 16-game regular season. Now, he wouldn't be expected to. Obviously, he came in week 3, so just needs to complete 12 games. And at this point, you would say they have potential to get into a playoff run, at least for a wild card contention, just given their hot start here. Do you see Nick having this job for the remainder of the year? Because I feel as though that's underrated that Mitch could get back on the field.
I think it has to be an injury. I don't think you could just go right back to Mitch. I don't think you can. I think once they made that decision, that was done. Like they basically said, Mitchell Trubisky is done here in Chicago. And that's the way I took it. That's the way probably Chicago fans take it. They've been waiting for it. And I don't think Trubisky was playing too bad. I think they say something like he's not good at the line of scrimmage is what his problem is. He can't make the adjustments at the line of scrimmage. But I don't think he was playing that bad. And I think, I don't think they could just go, Nick's playing bad, Trubisky's back in. I think it's going to have to be an injury. And do we see an injury? Like you said, with Foles' pass, yeah, it's probably going to come. I mean, I don't wish injury, and you don't wish it on anybody. But we just look at the past, and we look at what happens and what history takes us, and history's usually never wrong.
Yeah, I would say my interesting thought is, might as well honestly just make – at that point, wouldn't you just make Mitch inactive? Just have him as a healthy scratch, because I feel as though you're going to put more damage by having both those guys potentially. If Nick struggles and has a bad one, then it's like, oh, let's bring in Mitch. I think that's a horrible recipe for disaster that Matt Nagy could avoid by just giving his full vote of confidence in Nick Foles and just telling Mitch, hey, it's done. Your time in Chicago is done. You're not going to play another start or game for us moving forward.
Yeah, I think that's the best thing to do. Like you said, just enact it because you don't want them. So like you said, you're just going to cause that controversy and people, you know, the cameras are always going to be on Mitchell Trubisky now. Whenever Nick Foles like throws an interception or something, they're going to be like, well, this used to be the starter, and not to switch up the games. But Eagles coach Peterson, he came out and said the same thing because they're having the same issue there. And he said, once we go to Jalen Hurts, we don't want to do that because once we go there, it's over. It's over for wins. So that's the kind of the mentality you have to have. Once you bench your starter, there's no going back and forth. And there's no like, oh, we'll play this week, we'll play that week. No, that ruins the chemistry of your team, and you're not going to be able to do that. Once you change your starter, I think you're done.
Yeah. Well, we're done with that game. Let's move into our next game. The Jacksonville Jaguars, who laid a dud on Thursday night. I started Gardner Minshew in every fantasy league I had the opportunity to because I thought, silly me, he should be able to pick apart the Miami Dolphins defense. Boy, was I wrong. He's going in to face Joe Burrow and the Cincinnati Bengals. Now, the Bengals are favorites this week. 3 points favorites, according to the Vegas line. And one thing you can say about the Bengals, they've been in every game they've played this year. They've managed to continue to fight, and that's all on the shoulders, all on the throwing arm of one Joe Burrow. Do you think that the Bengals officially have a quarterback they can be proud of for the long term?
I think so, if they can keep him healthy, because he's taking some hits. I mean, you see every game you watch with him playing, he's taking hits. But he's playing way better than people expected a rookie with no offseason, no preseason. And he's coming in, I think he's doing a great job. You saw it last week. I mean, I'm surprised that you – I haven't looked it up, but I'm surprised that you said the Bengals are actually favored in this game.
They are at home. There is an interesting argument there when you look at this matchup. You mentioned that the Bengals offensive line hasn't done a great job of taking care of Joe Burrow. If the Jaguars can do anything on defense, I would say they can get to the quarterback with guys like Josh Allen on their team and Caleb on Chasen. Those guys are going to cause some issues potentially in this game for Joe Burrow. And I guess I might be tempted to take Jacksonville as a road upset here. You know what? Yeah, I think I'm going to go with that. I'm going to pick the Jags in an upset in Cincinnati. Joe?
Yeah, see, they're called Jacksonville for a reason. I haven't really like broke it down yet, but you know, the way you're talking, you're thinking the same line that I'm thinking, that defensive line is just going to eat him up. And I like Joe Burrow. I think he does what he scrambles. He gets out of the way. He gets rid of the ball. But after being embarrassed last Thursday night and with the hype and everything, I think Jacksonville comes back strong. And I probably go with Jacksonville in this game with you.
We usually don't do the over under, but 48.5 points, two bad teams. You know, think they go over that? There's not going to be a lot of defense played, at least I don't imagine.
Yeah, you know what? I'd probably go over. I've been going over a lot this year. And they said, like, this year has been a lot different. It's been, like, if you've been betting 50 or over in almost every game, that's what they've been all hitting. So I'd probably go over on it.
Well, the offenses are really ahead of the defenses at this point. That's what that tells me. You know what last week told me? The Cowboys don't have much of a defense, aside from Alden Smith. They got torched by soon-to-be MVP Russell Wilson. A lot of teams can actually say they've been torched by Russell Wilson. The Cowboys will be welcoming into town Baker Mayfield and the Cleveland Browns. Cowboys are going to be 4.5-point favorites at home. I am very intrigued at this game. It seems like this is going to be a fun game to watch. Do I trust the Browns on the road to go into Dallas? That's the thing. I know they're underdogs anyway, but I think I'm going to go with the Cowboys because I'm looking at the Browns. I'm still not sold. Something's missing there. They can definitely run the ball. Kareem Hunt, Nick Chubb, that backfield is deadly and dynamic. But then when I watch Baker, I'm just not impressed, man. He's just not doing anything that wows me. In fact, this past week against the Washington football team, I saw a highlight of Odell having to play defensive back. He had to go swat a potential Baker Mayfield interception. And that still concerns me. They have to limit the amount of times Baker throws. He has to have basically a Jimmy Garoppolo game every game moving forward for this team to be dynamic enough to win games. And I don't think that's a winning recipe. I'm going to pick the Cowboys to have a bounce back. They obviously had a rough week this past Sunday, and they're at home. All the Smith's going to cause issues. Give me the Cowboys.
Yeah, and this is one of the big games that people are talking about, you know, especially fantasy-wise, just because this should be just like the Seattle game. It should just be another shootout, hopefully. But like you said, something about that Cleveland offense, they can't get their passing game going. And is it Baker Mayfield? Maybe it is. Maybe it's just a design. Maybe, you know, they're just learning that offense still. But the good thing is, I think Kevin Stefanski has good experience with a quarterback like that, because he's coming from Kirk Cousins to now Baker Mayfield, that a lot of people don't like Kirk Cousins, and now they're dealing with him. But like you said, I think the saving grace is that running game. When you have two guys like Nick Chubb can break it any time, and Kareem Hunt's like speed, like surprise. Every I watch him all the time, and it's like his speed still surprises me when he comes around that corner. It's like, oh, there's no way he's gonna get around that corner, and then bam, he's gone. I think that's what helps them. And Cowboys have absolutely no defense. And you said it earlier. That was one of the things going into the season, of the knock on the Cowboys. Like, they're the number one offense in the NFL. They were the number one last year, the number one this year. So we know they could put up points. But how many track meets can you win? That's what you got to ask yourself. And I think Cleveland, you know, something's telling me to take Cleveland in this game, but I don't think I will. I think I'm going to go Cowboys.
Okay, I thought that was going to be our first split of the Sunday slate here.
I was close. I almost talked myself into it.
Okay, I don't think that we're going to split on this game. I could be wrong, because the Saints have been in a little bit of a free fall, at least in my power rankings. They dropped out of my top five, out of my top 10. They're currently at 11. They're going against the Lions on the road in Detroit. They're going to be road favorites at -4. They do potentially have the opportunity to have Michael Thomas back. The Lions are coming off a big road win, actually. They beat the Arizona Cardinals. It just seems that Matt Patricia's always due to happen to have one game where he puts together the perfect defensive scheme and they don't blow a fourth quarter lead. And that's what happened against the Arizona Cardinals. In fact, it's kind of frustrating if you are a Lions fan. You should be 2-1 at this point, bare minimum. And this team does put up a fight. But I think given the back-to-back losses, it's hard for me to go against the Saints. I think this is going to be a more motivated team heading into this week. And they're going to want to take advantage of their soft schedule now, because it gets a little bit tougher towards the back end of the year. I'm going to take the Saints to roll in this game, and I think they're actually going to go by a couple touchdowns.
See, I don't think we're going to split on it, but I could, like you said, every once in a while we could see the Lions pulling that upset, and I could actually see it, because the game plan to beat the Saints is out there. Is throw it deep on them, and they have no respect for their secondary. And, you know, the Packers did it last week, and the Packers did it without Davante Adams. The Raiders tried to do it, but, you know, they just got the pass interference calls. But with Galladay and, you know, the wide receiver core in Detroit, and that's what Matthew Stafford likes to do. He likes to throw it deep. I could see it. I'm not going to go with them, but I could see the Lions actually keeping it close and playing pretty good. Just offensive-wise, I don't think they have it defensive-wise to stop the Saints' offense. I think Alvin Kamara is on the next level, and he's out to prove this year that – last year was a fluke. He was hurt, and now he's 100%. And he just, like, he has to be the best running back in the game right now. Right now, he's the best running back in the game. They actually said that if you take away his rushing yards this year, Alvin Kamara, he would be the fourth best wide receiver just on his stats alone. On wide receiver, like, that's how much he's taken over games. And, yeah, I think the Saints, I think that Raider loss woke him up. They had, unfortunately, they had to pay the Packers the next week. But I think, you know, Detroit right here is the perfect combination for him, especially if they get Michael Thomas back.
Believe me, I have a team purely led off of Patrick Mahomes and Alvin Kamara at this point. No complaints about Kamara's performance on my end. If I told you Lions +4, would you be interested in taking them? Or, I mean, we're going straight up here as far as the pick anyway, but +4?
+4, I'd be intrigued just because of what I said, like, the Lions, you know, they like to throw deep, and that's the way you beat the Saints. And I like, you know, I think Adrian Peterson's playing out of his mind right now. Like, I didn't expect him to be the number one running back for the Lions right now. And, you know, it's just a surprise team. And like you said, yeah, they're 1-2, but they could easily have been 2-1.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about my new favorite superhero, Mr. Unlimited. competing for his first MVP on the 3-0 Seahawks. Going into Miami, the Seahawks are 6.5-point favorites on the road. I expect this game to be very high scoring. So does Vegas. The over-under is 53.5. The Seahawks defense is atrocious. This is absolutely what you would call a one-man show. It's going to be a argument moving forward. Can Russ continue to cook at this pace? Because 14 touchdowns through three games, that is absurd. I, of course, picked them to beat the Dolphins, but I'm amazed each and every week. 5 touchdowns last week. Good Lord.
Yeah, and he's going to have to continue that because they have, like you said, absolutely no defense. I don't know which defense is where. It's them or the Cowboys, and it's crazy. But I've said this in one of my podcasts that Ken Norton Jr., I don't know how he continues to get defensive coordinator jobs. Like, he was horrible with the Raiders. He's horrible with Seattle. And just because of his friendship, you know, with Jack Del Rio and Pete Carroll, he continues to do it. But that defense is, even with, you know, Jamal Adams, you're horrible. They actually have no pass rush. Like, they have nothing. But, you know, and here's what scares me about Seattle, too. And, like, I actually put a power ranking up today, and people gave me a lot of stuff about it. I want to say I put Seattle at, like, 6. I put them pretty low. I want to say 6 or 6, 7 or 8, where I can't remember exactly where it was. And people were giving me a hard time. But my thing is that defense, like, how long can, like we said it before, how with the Cowboys, how long can you continue to rely on Russell Wilson putting up 5 touchdowns a game? You know, especially with Carson out this week, or more likely going to be out. I mean, they are playing the Dolphins. It's the Dolphins and, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick. And, you know, that probably helps them out. But, yeah, I'm not buying into Seattle right now. I'm buying in, you know, that offense has to carry them the rest of the way. And when they run into a good defense, it's going to look nasty for them.
Yeah, that's going to be the make or break. Which Ryan Fitzpatrick shows up will be – he's a popular streamer option this week in fantasy. I see a lot of people picking him up. I'm a little bit scared to do that. I feel as though in those games in which you're hoping for the big Ryan Fitzpatrick game is when he lets you down the hardest, especially coming off a big Thursday night performance. I'm just going to throw it out there. If anyone's listening for a fantasy take, I'm not going to buy into Ryan Fitzpatrick this week. Our next game is going to be the Los Angeles Chargers on the road heading into Tampa Bay. Tampa Bay's not going to have to worry about any championship celebrations detouring them from this game, as obviously no crowds, but City of Champions right now. Tampa Bay is going to be touchdown favorites against the Chargers. The Chargers coming off a pretty bad loss, honestly. Against the Carolina Panthers, I know you got a rookie quarterback, but the Panthers don't have Christian McCaffrey, who's their do-everything back. There was really no excuse for them to lose that game. That's really an atrocious loss on their record. As far as the Bucs, they seem to be getting that rhythm going. They're starting to pick it up. I'm not going to put too much stock into, obviously, them beating the Broncos. But the fact that they passed the eye test a little better, and each week they seem to pass the eye test more and more, and I think they're starting to round into that form of being that Super Bowl contender that we saw them whenever Tom Brady was signed. And I think that this is going to be another easy win for them. I think that defense has shown that they're one of the better ones in the league. They have a great front seven, and I think that's going to be pose problems for any rookie quarterback, certainly Justin Herbert, who's still trying to figure things out in that offense.
Yeah, I think you hit it right. And the AFC West, man, they've been hit with injuries. Everybody except for the Chiefs have been hit with injuries, and the Chargers are no exception. They just placed the cornerback Chris Harris on the IR, which would have been very helpful in this game because that's what the Chargers did. The Chargers went out this offseason. They said, we're going to load up our secondary, and we're going to play, you know, we're going to compete with the Chiefs and all these teams with great, you know, wide receivers. And then James went down. Now Harris is down. You know, they have all these injuries. It's not helping them out. The Tyrod Taylor, I, you know, it was a freak injury by the doctor. And I, but I think it actually helped the team a little bit, to be honest with you, because I was not a believer in that offense with Tyrod Taylor. Now you bring in Herbert.
It forced their hand. That's the big one.
they were eventually going to do it, and they just had to do it earlier. And it's good because he's been looking good. But I think the main thing about this Buccaneer team, I think, is their defense. Their defense, I want to say their top five defense right now in the league. And that's what's getting it, because their offense, the Buccaneers' offense, we all thought their running game would probably be like, oh, who's going to be the best running back? Is it going to be Jones or is it going to be Fournette? Well, both of them suck. So, and then Mike Evans is basically – Mike Evans had two catches, two touchdowns. I'll take that. But where's the Mike Evans that we're used to? I thought we're going to be able to throw it downfield, see Mike Evans making these big plays like he used to. It's not there. They're relying more on the Scotty Miller because of Godwin not being there. It's not the Buccaneer offense that we expected to be. We thought they were going to be a high-scoring offense. But I think the defense is just putting them in great situations. And like you said, I'm going to take that defense against a lot of people this year.
Definitely Mike Evans diminished. I mean, let's be honest about it. Brady's throwing more ducks this year than he's ever thrown in his career. Chris Godwin being out, a great possession receiver, that definitely hurts them offensively. But, yeah, a rookie quarterback on the road going west to east, I just don't like how that lines up. In fact, I think the touchdown is a generous betting line for the Buccaneers. I think this is going to be a big win for them. Speaking of fuck you games, let's talk about the Ravens going into Washington, D.C. this week. Ravens coming off that big Monday night loss to the Chiefs. And I just want to say, I called it. Everyone is doubting me. Everyone's like, oh, you know, the Ravens, Lamar, you know, this is going to be a bit... Listen, I like Lamar, but every time they play the Chiefs, and Lamar has fessed up to him this himself, it's a bad matchup for them. They just can't seem to keep up with that Chiefs offense. If they fall behind early, it takes them out of their game plan. They can't do what they want to do. The Ravens are a great front-running team. If they can get that lead, if they can establish the run, they're fine. But they can't do that against the Chiefs, and that's why they had the issues that they had this past Monday. You know who's not going to be able to stop them, though? The Washington football team. with Dwayne Haskins, who apparently Ron Rivera doesn't even believe in. There were some quotes this week that has me thinking that I would not be surprised to see Kyle Allen sooner rather than later. I still want to see Alex Smith come back, of course, but he's been a healthy scratch the last couple weeks. This is a pretty straightforward game. I guess the only real question there is football team plus 12.
Yeah.
What do you think? Yeah, I'm not taking them even with a double-digit betting line.
Yeah, I would still take the Ravens with the minus 12. I just think, okay, if Chase Young was playing, which he's out of the game, I was very interested to see that matchup. It would have been cool to see what he did against, you know, a running quarterback like Lamar and put him up against, because that front seven of the Washington football defense could be compared to some of the top teams in the league. But like you said, you can't keep your defense on the field. You can't keep them on the field for 30 plus minutes a game because your offense is going three and out, or, you know, turning the ball over, or just they're going absolutely nowhere with that offense, and it's a horrible offense. And I think Baltimore's defense, like if you have Baltimore defense and you guys are turning in for fantasy or whatever you guys want to hear, the Baltimore defense this week is a great play. And that defense, I can see Marcus Peters scoring at least a touchdown in this game too with an interception return.
Yeah, bragging rights, obviously this is one of those close geographic games for people. Baltimore and D.C. is not that far of a train ride. I made that a couple times in my life, but... Yeah, there's going to be a lot of people on the train between D.C. and Baltimore going home pretty sad because, the Ravens are going to lay it on them this week. This is just get out of town. We'll move on to the next game. Not much more you can say about it.
I would be surprised if Washington scores. Let's just say that.
Yeah. the Cardinals in our next game coming off again. A loss to the Detroit Lions earlier, their first loss on the season. They are going to be favorites on the road against the Panthers team. They got their first win of the season this past Sunday. I think that was more an indictment on the Chargers than it's a plus for the Panthers. Matt Rhule to get a win this early on in his first season. Credit to him. I think that Matt Rhule actually is bound to make this team have a turnaround. I'm starting to see some positive signs already. Teddy Two Gloves is looking fine. Still, you know, you're just missing that offensive weapon. White Lightning, as he's called, Christian McCaffrey, he's not there. So this is a pretty straight, also a pretty straightforward game in the sense that I think that the Cardinals should be able to roll in this game. The Panthers don't really have any defensive presence. Luke Kuechly isn't walking back through those doors anytime soon. And being able to keep up and catch that when he looks into runs into open stride, that toddler who just got away with something, Kyler Murray, it's a challenge. It's hard to rein him in. I think this might be even a big Kenyon Drake week. If you've been hanging on Kenyon Drake and hoping for big days, this is a big play for you in fantasy this week. I'm going to take the Cardinals.
Yeah, they should be able to run up and down the field on the Panthers. And, you know, like you said, losing Kuechly was a big loss to him. But I think the Panthers, their play has impressed me a little bit because I didn't expect them to be playing this good at this early. And even Teddy Bridgewater, I think he's doing a great job. I mean, they have three solid wide receivers, and I thought they were going to take a little step back last week, and they ended up winning the game. You know, Mike Davis actually played pretty good, you know. I didn't expect that. I expected him, you know, oh, we lost our best player. You know, a lot of teams are down the next week because of that, a big injury like that. Well, no, they came out fighting. They came out proving like, hey, we're still here. We're still going to compete. And that, like you said, it makes Matt Rhule look like a very good coach. Now, Arizona, I think, might be a little bit too much for him just offensively, because this offense, that's all they're going to do. This offense basically is just designed to wear you down. Wear you down, and in the fourth quarter, third, fourth quarter, we take over and we run all over you. And Kyle Murray, I mean, he's looking good, right? He did throw three picks last week, but, you know, that's against the Matt Patricia Lion team that, you know, got hit lightning in the bottle one time. So, yeah, I would take Arizona in this game too. I just think that Carolina can't stop the run, and that's what Arizona wants to do.
Okay, let's end the morning slate on a positive note. Why is this positive? Because one of these teams is going to get their first win on the season. Disappointing, though, that both of these teams I had in the playoffs and one of them is going to go 0-4. The Minnesota Vikings at the Houston Texans. This one, also, I can't seem to see a betting line on here, so maybe a case in which Vegas has set it as a pick'em. Let me just double-check here. I'm not seeing the spread on this game, but one of these teams has to do it, and I like the Houston Texans out the gate a little bit more at home. They still don't have a takeaway, so I'm hoping positive turnover regression in their favor this week. I just have a little bit more faith in Deshaun. This has to turn around. They had to face the Chiefs, the Ravens, the Steelers in their first 3 weeks. That's all. That's just a horrific scheduling if you're the Houston Texans. You should sue the league for malcontent putting you against those three teams out the gate. And then the Vikings, man, this is not the Mike Zimmer defense we know and love. Their cornerback play, they are practicing social distancing at pro levels at this point because they cannot cover anyone to save their lives. They thought it was bad with Xavier Rhodes last year. They should have got a load of these guys they currently have. It completely neutralizes having guys like Danielle Hunter and Yannick Ngakoue. And without their ability to establish a lead, Dalvin Cook can't get involved, and then you're having to have Kirk Cousins get you out of a hole. They should have won this past Sunday, but still, I'm definitely disappointed in what I've seen from the Vikings, and it's hard for me to see them make a turnaround based off how this team is constructed. I'm going to pick the Houston Texans at home.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. Like you said, Texans, that schedule, like, wow. Like, you couldn't have asked for a harder schedule to begin the season with. They put up 21 points on the Steelers defense, which is, you know, one of the top defenses in the league. And, you know, they're working their way back. They're getting that. They basically changed their whole offense this season, you know, this offseason. They got a new running back. They got new wide receivers. And it took time to gel, and I think they were gelling last week. Randall Cobb, he's coming. You know, we expected him to, you know, not be as old, you know, because people call him old. And he's balling out this last couple weeks. Like you said, this was the first sign of life that we saw from the Vikings offense. You know, of course, they scored. Like, people were like, well, Cook was good in week one. No, he did it in blowout garbage time against the Packers in week one. This is the first time we actually saw the Vikings come alive on offense, and it still didn't work in their favor. Like, you know, Jefferson had, what, 175 yards receiving? Cook went for another 180 yards, I believe. I just don't know if they can continue it up. And even though even with the Texans, I grew up where, and you probably remember in the last couple of years, we always think of the Texans have a good defense, but, you know, really that's not the point anymore. Like the last 2 or 3 years, their defense has gone really downhill. Even with their defense going downhill, I'm still taking the Texans over the Vikings. I just can't trust Kirk Cousins.
And that's fair. Trusting Kirk Cousins. We made a podcast off of it. It's called The Slump Buster. Believe that. Next game, so we're moving into the afternoon slate. That is going to be the New York Giants going into Los Angeles to go against the Rams. The Rams had a interesting Sunday. They are big-time favorites in this game. 12 points Vegas is giving them. 12 points against the Giants. And considering that the Giants couldn't beat the Niners, JV team, that's no joke. That's no exaggeration. I'm a Niners fan, and listen to this. We had Jimmy out. We had Debo out, our number one wide receiver. We're on our third string center. Nick Bosa's out. Sherman's out. On and on and on. George Kittle's out. All these key performers. And the Giants were not within 20 points of the San Francisco 49ers. A pretty close comp is going to be those Los Angeles Rams. They're pretty close to the Niners in skill set. They could have beat the Buffalo Bills on the road. They almost came back in that game. If not for a questionable pass interference call, the Rams know all about questionable pass interference calls, so no harm, no foul. I agree with Vegas. Give me the Rams. Give me the Rams huge. The Giants are bad.
See, I picked the Rams as my upset of the week last week against Buffalo, and they almost pulled it off. I think they're a good team. They're surprising me this year because I didn't expect the Rams to come out and be as good as they are this year. I expected them to take a little step back. And maybe Buffalo did expose them a little bit, but I don't think so because that Rams offense still, you know, we were deciding who's going to be the running back for the Rams. Is it going to be Akers? Is it going to be Henderson? Is it going to be Brown? And it doesn't matter because these guys are running more this year than Sean McVay has ever ran. And to go up against the New York Giant team that just got killed, like destroyed by, like you said, the 49er team that was absolutely, like, you couldn't even name some of the starters that were playing for San Francisco last week. And they're, you know, like Nick Mullins. Who would know Nick Mullins if you weren't really a 49er fan or really a football fan? If you were just an average fan turning the game on, you'd be like, who's this guy? He come from the XFL? Like,
fun fact about Nick Mullins, literally 2 years ago when he had to start for Jimmy G during the ACL tear, he got Twitter verified during his first game against the Oakland Raiders.
Yeah, I don't want to talk about that game.
You're a big fan of the team on our next game. We'll get into that. We'll get into that. Let's finish up here.
I remember that game.
So Rams going over big on the Giants. One thing I'll say, so you mentioned the running game, Sean McVay running it more with that rotation of back, stealing a play off the Kyle Shanahan playbook there. The Giants, I will say one of the few positives they did this past Sunday was restrict the run. It's going to be important for Jared Goff to light up their outside corners, which he should be able to do. If he just follows the game script, he should be able to take advantage. Aside from James Bradbury, there's really not much to like about the Giants this year. They're going to make some bad plays. Daniel Jones is going to make some bad plays. And when you have to face still two stars on the other half of the defense in Aaron Donald and Jalen Ramsey, you really can't afford to make that many mistakes. Give me the Rams. You got the Rams. Let's get into the next game. So I take it you're a Raiders fan based off that comment right there.
Yeah, I'm a Raiders fan.
Okay, well,
that's how I know Nick Mullins because I was introduced to him real quick.
Yeah, well, let's talk about the Raiders and how they're going to do in their second game in Las Vegas against the 3-0 Buffalo Bills. Now, I have been impressed with the Raiders offense, but now we have seen what this past Sunday we saw what the Raiders do when their offense isn't clicking on all cylinders. Their defense is still pretty bad. It still remains bad. I don't know, year to year, doesn't matter who the coach is, who the regime is, the Raiders defense just doesn't get their shit together. And based off what Josh Allen has been able to do to this point, 3-point favorites for Buffalo, I think, honestly, I'm sorry to tell you, man, I'm taking the Bills.
No, I like what, and I've talked about this in my own podcast, I like the Josh Allen this year. I think he's made a big step forward, and I was watching that game against the Rams last week where normally he would take off and run in the last couple of years, and he's actually, you know, pulling up, finding that wide receiver and throwing it. And Diggs is a big addition to that team. You have to – like, that was the best trade that they could have ever done, I think, to bring in a wide receiver like Diggs to help them out. Their running game, I think, you know, they need to get it going again, but they have Zach Moss coming back this week. The Raiders, like you said, I think the Raiders, the score was a little bit higher and one-sided than what the game actually – I think what the actual game was against the Patriots last week. You know, they had some big turnovers that they did themselves. And I think, you know, no excuses, but I think they went away from the run game a little bit too early. The Raiders did with Josh Jacobs. And injuries have been piling up on the Raiders. Like we said, I think this weekend they're going to be without Henry Ruggs. They're going to be out without Brian Edwards, and their defense can't tackle. Like you said, they can't tackle. I thought last week against the Patriots, they had some great blitzes. They got there, and Jonathan Abram pulled up before he even made the hit on the quarterback. It's like, what are you doing? If they're sending you on a blitz, make that hit. But, you know, they had a lot of stops, and then, a lot of backfield hits, and that turned into 10-yard gains. And the Raiders need to get it under control, and I think they made a big mistake in letting their defensive line coach go to Arizona and bringing in Rob Marinelli. But that's a whole other story. But with all the injuries, everything, and I'm a huge Raider fan, and I'd hate to do it, but I'm going with Buffalo this week.
It's just a poor matchup. With, as you mentioned, the receiving core being a little bit banged up, Derek Carr is going to have to do what he did against the Saints and spread the ball around. And I think the problem is the Buffalo Bills and what they like to do on defense, they'll take that stuff away from you. That's not going to be as much an option. Tre'Davious White, he's going to lock down one side. I think the Bills just have enough defensively to restrict the Raiders' offense, which that's not the type of game that the Raiders can win. And, yeah, that's why I got Buffalo. Closing out the afternoon before we move into Sunday night, this is a fun one. New England Patriots on the road in Arrowhead against the Kansas City Chiefs. Kansas City Chiefs had a big week 3. As mentioned earlier, they beat the Baltimore Ravens in one of the most highly publicized Monday Night Football games in recent memory in my book. Against the Patriots, definitely the NFL is fooling us with this early slate of matchups within the AFC. This is a team between two playoff teams. I think with Cam Newton, with Bill Belichick, we've learned a lot about the Patriots, that this is a team of champions. This is a simple this is a franchise that just do your job. It's simple. You know, it's a philosophy that's just Bill. As long as Bill is there, you can believe in that. And then they go out there and sign a former MVP in Cam Newton. And believe me, he's doing the job. He's getting his job done. Will he get the job done against the Kansas City Chiefs on Sunday? The answer, no. The Chiefs are rolling. I love the Chiefs. I had them going 14-2 this year, and I don't think that this is going to be the week that they get stopped. They are touchdown favorites, which I think is a little bit high. I think that what the Patriots are going to try and do is they're going to keep the ball on the ground. They get James White back this week. They're going to do everything to keep the ball out of Patrick Mahomes' hand. At least that's been Bill's strategy the last few years that they played them with Tom. I think the problem is Cam isn't known for consistently stringing drives together like Tom Brady is. And I think that that's going to be a big hindrance for them in this game. I'm going to take the Chiefs. And, yeah, I could see them beating them by, like, 10 points. So I think Vegas has this one about right.
Yeah, and you saw a couple of weeks ago when Russell Wilson lit the Patriots up and they, you know, put up 35 points on them. So even if the Patriots offense can score on the Chiefs defense, which I think they can easily, and I think last week's game – against the Raiders actually showed more that the Patriots are better than people expected them to be this year. And I think the Cam Newton signing was good, and I think the running game actually got started last week. But Yeah, I don't see them holding the – like you said, the Chiefs are on a whole nother level right now. They have so many weapons. Even if you want to take Tyreek Hill out of the game, now you have Hardman or you have Sammy Watkins. It's like, who do you got to pick the guy that you want to let beat you. And that's where the Patriots are going to have problems with. But like you said, would you say 7 points? Yeah, I wouldn't bet against Bill Belichick with 7 points. I think they keep it close. You know what I mean?
They can. It is going to be a good game. It might be one of those games where you see a backdoor cover and the Patriots manage to come through, score a late touchdown. That's a way I could see that one game finishing. All right. Well, let's move into Sunday night. My Niners, as mentioned, they managed to have a couple games here in which I'll admit I doubted them. On my other show, 49 Reasons Listen, go ahead and subscribe to that channel, by the way. I had them actually losing to the Giants. And why, explaining that, again, when I just mentioned the amount of injuries this team had, the fact that they just were able to roll in that game caught me off guard. Now, their opponent this week is a team that I was very high on, to say the least. I had this team going 11-5, winning the NFC East, and they do not look like that team. I still have them about 22 in my rankings that I just put out, but I didn't feel good about it. I felt as though the Eagles are living off reputation in my rankings at this point. I feel as though Carson Wentz is living off that 2017 almost MVP season, and I just have a lot of doubts and questions. The Niners are touchdown favorites in this. I'm going to pick the Niners to win at home in Levi, but I think this game is going to be a lot closer than Vegas has it. I could see this one being like a field goal game, if you ask me. So I guess I would, in theory, take the Eagles +7, but I would take the Niners to win the game.
Yeah, I still don't trust the Eagles. I still won't do it. I would still take the Niners even with the 7. I think the Niners, even with all the injuries, they're proven that, you know, it's a Shanahan ran offense. So any running back that you put in there should be able to do good. And you saw Jeff Wilson go off last week. And yeah, I know they're banged up. I know they're hurting, but this is a team that just tied the Bengals. They just tied the Bengals and like the Bengals game, they had to come back against the Bengals even just to get into overtime to, you know, to do it. And I think, you know, I think they're going to have a great game plan. I think the 49ers offense can go up and down the field, even without, you know, their top guys. I think it's easy. I think Kittle's coming back this week, right?
So Garoppolo, Debo Samuel should all be back. So the Niners are getting a little bit healthy for this game.
Yeah. Like you said, I think the Eagles' reputation, and, you know, hey, they're 0-2-1, and they're only one game back of their division lead. that's surprising, but, I mean, I shouldn't be surprised with the NFC East. But I don't know. I like the way the Niners are playing, and I think they want to prove a statement, even with these injuries, that they could still hang in with the best, and I would go with the Niners in this game.
Okay. So both going with the Niners. Okay. And you expect them to roll a little bit more. I like that. Faithful to the Bay. Go Niners.
I'm not faithful to the Bay. I'm just saying.
Well, you know, they're more faithful than other teams. I'm not throwing any shade out here, am I? okay. Well, let me ask Joe, do you like conspiracy theories?
Do I like them? Sometimes.
A little. Okay. Okay. Gotcha. Because I kind of have a conspiracy theory this week. I think that the NFL looked at their Monday night football game and said, you know what's better than one Monday night football game? Two. Because we have a big story this week, actually a delayed game. Actually, we might even have Tuesday night football based off the reports I'm hearing. The 3-0 Steelers versus the 3-0 Titans in Nashville. Apparently, some personnel for the Titans tested positive, causing this game to get pushed back. I think it was a matter of time, even with the NFL doing everything that they had in their power, someone was eventually going to test positive. The main question is the reasons behind it, what happened, because obviously the league is taking it very seriously. These guys are getting tested every day. And in the other sports, the only examples we had of players testing positive for stuff was players being knuckleheads, to say the least, whether it be Patrick Beverly going out of the bubble, whether it be the St. Louis Cardinals players going to the casino, or the Miami Marlins doing God knows what in Miami. But those are the examples of other sports having breaches and containment. I won't hold too much judgment on the Titans, but I wouldn't be surprised if you told me they were at a Nashville strip club or something like that came out here in the next week. In terms of the game, I think I like the Titans to be able to do all the right thing, or sorry, the Steelers to be able to do all the right things to hold the Titans, to restrict the Titans. Let's face it, the Titans want to do one thing, establish the run, pound the ball with Derrick Henry. You know a team you can't do that against? The Pittsburgh Steelers. Their defense, this is the first time in years that we can say that the Pittsburgh Steelers have been led by their defense. That's a young, athletic group. They have a lot of guys that can move. They're built for this current way of NFL play. Their linebackers are so dynamic, so versatile, can really get out there against these younger, athletic, mobile QBs. The Steelers are a fun team to watch this year. And hey, Big Ben, he's looking okay. He hasn't had one of those games where he throws like just five interceptions. In the game, I project them to win. You can approach this from two angles. You could talk about the COVID stuff. You could go ahead and talk about just the game. Whatever you're feeling, Joe.
Well, yeah, and it's not like it's the big name guys out there that have COVID. What you're seeing is like these special teamers and backup guys are the ones that are testing positive. And I think it comes down to what, you know, the next couple of days, if they have any big names or any bigger, more and more people. I think one tested positive today, so I think they're up to nine. If somebody else or two or three more people, I think, you know, we might not even get the game this week. If I was a betting man, I would say it would be Monday. Every time the league says Monday or Tuesday, it's always Monday. And I read Mike Tomlin after practice today for the Steelers actually said that they, you know, that they're expecting Monday. And then I read something that they've already told CBS to be ready for Monday. So I would say that it happens on Monday, just like you said. The Titans, I think the Titans are a surprise team, right? Like, did you expect the Titans to be 3-0? I know I didn't. I wanted to see where Tannehill was this year and if it was just a one-year thing. And, you know, I think Tannehill's playing a lot better than we thought. A.J. Brown is hurting them not being on that field. But, yeah, the Steelers defense is exactly where I thought they would be. I thought Big Ben would be a little bit better. But I guess, you know, when you take a year off with injury, it might take a while for your arm strength to get back. In this game, you know, I like when teams run the ball. I like when they pound the ball. But like you said, the Steelers defense is too much. So, yeah, I'd probably take Pittsburgh in this game as well, especially with the Titans not being able to be in their facility, not being able to practice. This is the first time that any team is doing it because they're not allowed in their facility until Saturday.
Yeah.
Everything like we are right now.
It's a lot to ask from a game planning perspective. Like you said, luckily they're not at the point where if, let's say, Derrick Henry tested positive. They're not at that point. They're not having to change their entire philosophy on defense. They might have to move some stuff around, some key points, but for the most part, they're going to be fine. And this is why the NFL took the precautions, expanded the practice squad, had guys that you could come up. I think there's been a lot of fail safes in the event this happened. Week four, honestly, I would say is kind of a win that it took it this long for this kind of outbreak to happen. Weren't you expecting it a little bit sooner than this?
Yeah, you everybody expected it. It was just a matter of when. And you were hoping that it, you know, it'd be early in the season, which it is. But you know what's interesting to me, and maybe I'm jinxing it, maybe now, you know, after I say it and it comes out, maybe I'm jinxing it, but how come it's all East Coast or middle right there on the, you know, I would say East Coast teams getting these positive tests? Like, that's what's interesting to me. And in almost every sport, it's been that side of the country that's getting hit.
I guess you could probably say that a lot more of the states on that side of the country have opened up a little bit more and certainly given players more options. Again, I don't want to just assume and put that out there that these guys were out there drinking, bar hopping, going to casinos. But in the cases that we have seen, again, in the other sports, it has been a lot of that. It hasn't been guys just going to the grocery store and, oh, God, I guess I could test it positive. And I think that may had been what happened. I think if I'm not mistaken, Nashville itself is more opened up. I want to say I've heard about bars being open there. Could be wrong. If anyone's listening out in Nashville and wants to drop in my DMs and tell me I'm dead wrong, feel free to. But at least that's what I've heard, that bars are open up there. So I don't know if the players, hey, we beat the Vikings, let's have a fun night when we get back home, and that's what happened. Hopefully everyone's fine. Hopefully everyone feels better. Again, week four, not that bad. And if anything, too, this could serve as a wake-up call, because if you remember in the MLB example that I mentioned, pretty much after the Cardinals and Marlins stuff happened, it seemed like you didn't hear about too many more cases or too many more outbreaks happening. I think that was just the reaffirmation that, oh, yeah, this is still a thing. Oh, yeah, we still got to worry about this stuff. And that's what caused players to reel it in a little bit.
Well, I don't know if you saw what the yesterday? The Raiders just got hit today with all the news that like 10 of their players, Derek Carr, Waller, a couple other big name players were all at a charity event last night, and the video came out of them all without masks. And it was like a room full of people. And when I saw the video, me as a Raider fan, my jaw dropped, because I'm in California. We're like, wear a mask, wear this. You can't go here. You can't go there. We're like completely like shut down. Like if you want to go to a restaurant, you have to eat outside. It's still like, we're still shut down. So when I saw it and I see, you know, and it's interesting to see other people, parts of the world, like you said, or parts of the country that are open. When I saw what Vegas was doing, or what, you know, Derek Carr on stage with his mask off, like me, I was like, oh, and now it's coming out that the NFL is going to investigate that. I think, like you said, it's going to wake a lot of people up. Like, hey, you were getting too comfortable. Yeah, we haven't had, you know, positive tests in a couple of weeks, and now you guys got too comfortable with what you're doing, and here it is. And hopefully this wakes you up for the rest of the season, and we can go the rest of the season without a COVID case after this one. I hope that's this is the last that we hear of COVID in the NFL.
On the bright side, hopefully at least none of them got caught sneaking a girl into their team hotel dressed as a Titans player.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's talk about the real Monday night game, the Monday night game we were expecting, the Falcons at 0-3 versus the 3-0 Packers. The Packers are 7.5-point favorites at home. The Falcons have just found new creative, fun ways to lose each and every week. On the other side of the ball, the Packers have gone out of their way to prove me wrong. I had this team, I was not impressed at the eye test last year. It didn't look like a 13-3 team should. It looked like a 6-10 team posing as a 13-3 team. And every step of the way this season, Aaron Rodgers is flourishing in that Matt LaFleur, Kyle Shanahan centric offense, you know, inside zone motion. He's looking more comfortable, and that's why he's also MVP candidate. If Russ slows down a little bit, Aaron Rodgers might pass him in terms of how that is evaluated in the trophy race this year. I do believe that the Packers are going to win this game, which I think might be the first time I've selected them in a matchup this year. but don't be surprised if this is a high-scoring, highly contested game. The Falcons can at least do one thing well. I believe they've outgained each and every one of their opponents in each of the 3 weeks. They're going to put the ball up in the air, and it's going to be a great week for fantasy on Monday Night Football. So if you're behind in your game, if you're losing in your matchup, and you need a big week from someone, this might be the game for you. Where are you on this, Joe?
Yeah, I'm a Matt Ryan fantasy guy, so I always root for Matt Ryan. Part of me wants to see the Falcons jump up early again and blow another lead. I mean, can we get 3 weeks in a row of that? Like,
oh, Dan Quinn's gone immediately. He doesn't even make it on the team flight back at that point. They strand him in Green Bay.
if the Falcons jump up to 20-0 or even 20-7, and then we see the Packers coming back, everybody's just going to automatically see it and go, oh, man. The Falcons defense, you know, we knew that was going to be, you know, they improved a little bit last year towards the end of the year, but I don't think they do enough work for it, you know, in the offseason to put enough players on that defensive side of the ball. And, you know, they've always known their offense was good with Matt Ryan and Julio Jones. You know that you're going to compete with people, and they brought in Todd Gurley, who probably is the second best running back on that team, to be honest with you, with Hill there. Like you said, I think they can put up some points, but I think they lose. I think they go to 0-4. And, you know, even if they don't blow a lead, I could still think, you know, they might be able to make that change at coaching this you know, at the same week. Because they might go, oh, the Jets did it. We're going to do it too. Why not?
I saw a little bit of temptation there for you to pick the upset. I saw it. I was tempted to myself. Am I this bold? Am I this bold? Because, I mean, the Falcons, people were talking about them as potentially a playoff team this year. But now that they're 0-3, it makes it so much more difficult, given their division, given who they're going up against. Yeah, you know, this is just a bad year, rough year for them. And it doesn't help scheduling-wise that they have to face the Packers in Week 4. So, sucks to suck, Atlanta. Sorry about it. No one's rising up this year.
I was just impressed with the way they played the Cowboys. Yeah, the Cowboys came roaring back and beat them, but they had such a great game plan and they held the Cowboys in check, you know, until they blew that lead. That's what makes me think, like, if they ever can put it together for a whole game, they're going to be a good team, and we expect that, but it's not happening. It's not. I don't know what it is, but it's not happening.
Okay, guys. Well, that's going to do it for NFL Week 4. Before we send off Joe here, it's time to answer a Slump Buster favorite question. What is your favorite all-time sports movie? Go for it.
All-time sports movie. You know what? There's one movie that always comes on. It has to be Moneyball. I love Moneyball for some reason. I'm a big football fan, but Moneyball to me just is a great underdog story, even though they didn't win it. But it's just – and the analytics and everything behind the scenes just gets to me. Moneyball has to be my favorite.
I wish, you mentioned it, even though they didn't win it, I wish there was a better real-life story for the Oakland A's, especially considering this year, even in 2020, it hasn't quite worked out for them. But, Brad Pitt, very fun to watch. I think that's the ultimate honor for Billy Beane to get played by Brad Pitt. if you're going to have anyone play your life story, I think – give me Brad Pitt. Give me Leo. Give me one of these guys. I imagine that makes you feel a certain way. We've answered this question on the show before. If you had anyone to play you, Joe, in a movie, who would you want to be?
Oh, Denzel Washington.
Ah, okay. Gotcha. I can see the resemblance.
I look just like him. If you put a picture of me and Denzel, people probably like, it's twins right there.
See, there was a part of me that wanted to quote Training Day, but I don't have that right complexion. I'm a little bit on the darker side, but not that dark to be able to pull that off.
I would, for me, looking at me and you got to compare me to an athlete, you probably think like, or an actor, it'd probably be like Jonah Hill or something like that, right? Somebody would play me.
Hey, he heard how much you loved him in Moneyball. It would be an honor to have you play. The key is you just have to catch Jonah Hill when he's in his acquiring mass phases, I guess we would say, because you know Jonah Hill, he goes in cycles depending on what role he's playing.
They call him a shapeshifter. Is that what they call him? Like people that can keep shifting?
I believe it. I believe it. He goes up and down and up and down. Where you're gonna find yourself on the Jonah Hill roller coaster, we don't know. But Joe, where can we find you? Where can the listeners find you? Go ahead and educate the people. What are you working on? What you doing? And how can we get in touch with the Joe Morway Sports Podcast?
The easiest way is to go to joemorwaysports.com. That has every link that you need. It even has all my podcasts previous from the beginning all the way till now. You can find me on Instagram, Facebook, at Joe Morley Sports. Or you can go to Ryan's Show Sports. I just joined up with them. We're going to be on a couple of radio stations here and there. The way I'm going, I think we're going pretty big. And I love it, man. I love it.
Well, we love that you came on the show this week. You guys know it, the Slump Buster Podcast, episode 72 in the books. Go ahead and check us out on Instagram. Come for the memes, stay for the podcast at Slump Buster Podcast, on Twitter at Slump Buster Pod. Find us on all major streaming platforms. Go ahead and use promo code Slump at manscaped.com, at Caveman Coffee. Check out razorsport.com, razersport.com. And most importantly, folks, I want you to stay safe, happy, and healthy. And we'll see you on the next episode.